Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to another Crosshairs Radio and another episode of They Don't Do That in Europe. In just a moment, Scott Diedenbach and Mr. David Palin will join me. We're going to talk about the final races happening in Europe. Also, go over a little bit of what happened in Colorado Springs at the race director, UCI race directors meeting for U.S. cyclocross. And yeah, get off onto a lot of tangents in between. This episode is brought to you by Health IQ, life insurance. I'd love for you all to go to healthiq.com/cxhairs, fill out a quick survey. They are looking for active people, for cyclists. If you are an active cyclist, and they are going to be able to get you the best rates for life insurance, that's going to benefit you. If you go to healthiq.com/cxhairs, it's going to benefit us at this show. What else will benefit us is if you go to wideanglepodium.com, hit on the donate button on that page, become a member of the Wide Angle Podium podcast network, and check out the new shows that are up there, the Dirtfield recordings. That's something that I'm working on Lindsay Bear with. Lindsay's been on this show a couple times. She has her second episode that's going to be out there later today, so you know you can get all of your cyclocross cravings taken care of, then move on over and see what's going on the in the world of road racing with Lindsay Bear. So check out her podcast. And also, when you're at Wide Angle Podium and you're becoming a member, you're going to have the opportunity to pick which shows you support. It'd be awesome if you support all of them, but we would love for you to support Crosshairs Radio and also the Dirtfield recordings. Let's get Lindsay some member donors and some contributions so we can keep that show going as well. All right, they don't do that in Europe. As always, I'm going to hand things off to Mr. Scott Diedenbach, who is going to lead the proceedings, and he is going to do that right now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back for another edition of They Don't Do That in Europe. With me, as always, I don't have my Skype screen up, so I think you're on the right, Mr. David Palin.
Good evening, cyclocross fans.
Yes, it's evening, and we are recording, and with us again, of course, on the left, Bill Chaiken, fresh from his jaunt out to the Colorado for the race directors meeting. Bill, what's going on?
Back in D.C.
Are you alive after that?
I am. You know, it's a little dicey with the 1 a.m. arrival in D.C. on Friday night, but yeah, all good.
Were you blocked? Were you blocked coming back in?
No.
Locked. They didn't go through his paperwork and everything. And
you know, I got in ahead of the, I saw this coming. So I have global entry and TSA pre-check and everything like that just to make sure.
But you have dark hair and a beard.
I know.
You are a dangerous character.
I know. And a foreign sounding name. Yeah.
And of a Semitic people. Shall we just say.
Oh, all right, guys, we are here to wrap up our coverage of the UCI season. We got the last three races from the series that we cover, and it seems like it just started, man.
I know. Well, and yeah, and even if it's ending, like I believe the cross is coming.
I think so. I think I saw something coming out of the
I think I've seen some hashtags already. Yeah, out of Australia, right. Yep, cross is coming. August. We are looking for August for the Australia C2 in Melbourne now. But okay, what we're going to cover, we're going to start covering the final De Veve race in Lille. Say it, David. Which was awesome. And then we're going to finish up the last two Super Prestige races. The last one just finishing yesterday. We're going to give results and talk about all those. I don't think we watched the Middlekirk race. A ton of us watched the Middlekirk race. But anyways, yeah. So let's start with the De Veve series finale in Lille. And you guys, I remember what we were all watching that. Everybody was on Twitter. And I think I tweeted this out. I'll say it again right now. This is a perfect reason why this race, why you should not stop watching after Worlds. This might have been the best men's race of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Would you guys agree? Would you agree, Bill?
I'd agree. Yeah. I mean, we had, five guys coming down on the last half lap, all with a chance to win it.
Yeah, I mean, just an incredible race. It was so exciting. And yeah, the women's race was really good. But as far as the men's race go, I think it was the best men's race we've seen this season. David, what did you think?
Man, I was energized by that. Really got my motor going, in that, especially in that last half lap, man. I thought it was great. No,
before we get into that,
before you even jump around, like cycle photos, the work that Baylen Humvis does, and I got my book. I hope you guys bought your book, the Cyclocross Yearbook from Baylen Humvis.
Yeah. Huh?
No.
What?
I did not.
Is this like news to you guys already?
No.
Kickstarter.
No.
He does his Kickstarter every year.
He came in right under the gun too. Made it right there in time. Got it all fully funded. No, I'll be buying one.
Yep. Absolutely. So I always get him on Kickstarter, because then I figure I can say, like, you know, I'm the guy that pushed him over the edge, and I'm the reason why you guys can buy that book.
I like to make Balan prove himself to me.
There you go. But any way you look at it, man, these pictures of Lily were top notch.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Yeah. Sweet.
Pictures
I haven't seen
of Lily, man. I just leave.
I'm there with you. I hear you.
I have no idea what you guys are.
So, oh my God, don't pictures of Lily make your life so wonderful?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pictures of Lily help you sleep at night? No, come on, man.
You know, all I have to
say. I know
say,
you're young.
Wait,
I know you're young, Scott.
David,
go ahead.
David,
go ahead.
All I have to say about this race.
Yeah.
It just ensured that we all know, watching the guys at the front, that the kids are all right.
The kids are all right.
Okay, I'm going to give this
strategy.
All right, who's next?
All right. Men's race top five. First place was Matthew Vanderpool. Second place, Wout Van Aert. Third place, Tom Ewson, just beating out Kevin Powles for 7th place. In 4th place was Kevin Powles. And in 5th place, Lars Vandehaar. For the U.S., in 33rd place was Stephen Hyde. And in 38th place was Kerry Warner. So, okay, let's get right to it. Wout's wheel spin, basically, in my opinion, more of the same. Nothing, when you look at it, I don't see anything other than a guy putting out what on that spot right there, maybe 500 watts at least. And his bike goes sideways in the mud and his wheel spins as he's pedaling, and it continues to spin even when he stops pedaling.
It's hard to see, but it's also on a descent.
Yeah, so to me, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Nothing. So
some adverse camber.
I didn't realize, because it was just that slide out and the save, and then, if people don't know what we're talking about, it's late in the race. The five of these guys are basically racing for the win. Wout wants to be in front coming into the end of this race, goes wide during this sort of sketchy section near the pit. Comes out wide, his rear wheel just shoots out from him, whole bike goes sideways, and when he's doing that, his back wheel, when it hits the mud, just zooms up. So it, you know, everybody is again saying, oh, he's definitely got a motor in his bike, because there's no other explanation for it other than just sort of gravity and physics. So that happens, and then he comes back up, he bumps into Vanderpool, sort of pushes him into the barriers. Vanderpool, I think, almost unclips and has to lean back, you know, just clearly rubbing his race in, pushes him back just so he doesn't crash into the barriers with the slanty legs. Vanderpool saves it. And then the great thing, Wout, like, lifts up his left hand off of his bars a little bit, basically to say, my bad, I'm really sorry, while they're racing, like, at top speed.
Yes.
And
Tom Mewson's yelling from behind him.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
My fault, guys.
My fault, guys.
But, you know.
But, yeah, to Wout's credit, he kind of had a slight advantage in position, I think, right there, and he didn't take advantage of it. He let things kind of renormalize, and then they continued on. So,
yeah, I mean, it was definitely a, you know, a holy-ass moment there for him, and I think just the adrenaline getting back in it. What that did, it did actually pop Vanderpool at that point and let him take that lead, and then he was able to take advantage of that. And
he goes
and
out
go
from there
the
pretty handedly wins. Yeah,
but the hilarious thing about this, so I posted this. Maybe I'm just naive, but I didn't even think motor when I saw that clip. So I just gift it and put it out on Twitter. And at this point, I'm just looking at it right now. It has over 1,000 likes and 408 retweets because everybody keeps going, look at the motor on his bike.
Look
and
the
they're
motor.
Just retweeting my tweets on it.
I just don't see it. I'm sorry. I
don't see it there. I could see the argument, although obviously it was a pedal strike earlier in the season.
Yeah.
But here it's just, you're just stretching, man. Thank you, 60 minutes.
Yeah, right.
The other thing I wanted to mention about this race, another really cool moment I thought was, this race was full of cool moments, but another one was Vanderpoel taking that early dismount on that one hairpin where he dismounts early, gets the inside line, and the fact that he said that he saw, I think
Sophie,
it was Sophie DeBoer.
Sophie DeBoer, yep.
In the women's race. And just how cool that is, that one, that he's watching, paying attention, and sees that, and then goes and uses it to his advantage in the men's race as well. And it just gives so much, you know, it shows you why women's racing is so important too. And they do stuff there that anybody can learn from, you know, even the elite men. So
yeah,
I just thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And especially for him, somebody who, you know, we always talk about how he's able to do things on his bike, that he was really able to get that advantage off of his bike by dismounting when Van Aert definitely go and check that out, 'cause it's one of the best passes you're going to see. And Sophie DeBoer did the same thing to Sané Kant before having sadly a late race crash, which we'll talk about, that put her out of contention. But that was really, you know, without that crash, was probably the winning move for DeBoer in that race. So a lot of just really, really great racing in this men's race on that final lap.
Yep. I agree. Anything else you want to mention, or is she ready to move on to the women's race since we brought it up? Anything else?
I think the only other thing is, you know, another good performance by Lars Vanderhaar, you know, sticking with the bunch in this, definitely out there out front, you know, making some moves. And I think it's just, you know, assuming he stays healthy through this off season, it has to be a confidence builder for him, just that he is with these guys at the front. Along with Mason too, you know, we talked about his disappointment at Worlds and how he came into that in such great form that he's still able to sort of duke it out with Vanderpoel and Van Aert at the front of the race.
So, Bill, do you think that these guys are coming in, both of them, as Telenet Lions next year?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing with Mason, and he put again. You know, we all know nicest guy out there, but he, Cornevik Kessel, signs a contract with Telenet, and Mason's the first one basically to tweet out, you know, what gives? I'm still waiting around. Why haven't we gotten my deal done yet? The interesting thing about this is that Sven's agent and Mason's agent are the same guy. So there's something else going on here. There's some sort of, you know, inner tension that needs to be worked out to see, because it's, you know, there's a lot of people on the same side here, so it's interesting that this hasn't gotten worked out yet.
It would be interesting. I think it could be either way for Tom Mason would be fine. I think he's going to be fine either way. I think, to be honest, you know what, Tom Mason has had a lot of bike problems this year.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just keep thinking, it's like, hey man, another team might not be the worst thing for Tom Mason, to be honest.
One last,
assuming
thing.
He ends up on another team, and I would certainly think he would.
I don't know.
At this point, it's like he is showing that he deserves to get a big contract. So it's, where does he go?
Yeah,
you know, it's right.
Did he and Klaus go somewhere together?
Well, yeah. I mean, Klaus looked like he had a little better end of the season, but we'll see. One thing that I will say, and it sort of goes against what I said a couple minutes ago, that, you know, is with like Vanderhaar and even Tom being able to stick with Vanderpoel and Van Aert, the fun thing about these post-Worlds races, and the reason, I mean, people want to say that the season's over, and Scott, like you mentioned before, the reason that you want to keep watching is that it's been such a long season that these guys are starting to get worn down, and I think you can really see it in Van Aert the most, but also in Vanderpoel, even though he started a little later, is that they're starting to come back to the pack some.
Yeah,
you know, and, I
and
think,
it's partly why, like, a rider like Vanderhaar, I think you can still see he's still got like fire in his legs.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So that,
especially this weekend.
So, you know, we may start the beginning of next season, and once again, it's going to be Van Aert and Vanderpool just taking off the front, and it's just going to be them too. I think they have gone so hard every race that they've been in this year that they've come back to the pack, and that's what makes these late season races that much more dynamic and that much more exciting to watch.
And also, the first, it always seems too, the first race after Worlds is always really good because people are pissed.
Right.
They're pissed that they didn't do better at Worlds. So it's like they're fired up to come out and do something, you know. So my opinion is we always seem to see really good races the first major race following Worlds. So
look at Van der Poel's results post Worlds. He's pretty mad about not having that jersey.
Right. He's basically won everything. I mean, you know, Wout hasn't won with the new jersey, right? I don't think. Right?
No,
yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And Sonny Khan just won today, I think, for the first, or she won yesterday and today, this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so it's a curse of the World Champions jersey.
Right. Does that carry over into cross? I don't know.
No, I don't
let me ask you about this. one of the young guns that we were talking about coming into this season that we thought was going to be up there with Vanderpool and Van Aert every race was Lauren Swick, 13th in today's race. Do you think, I mean, kind of a disappointing season for him, don't you think?
He's certainly not showing consistency. You know, he'll have like a good race here and there and get top five or even on the podium, but he's not consistently there. Like you said, you know, dropping into the 13 or something. Yeah, I would say maybe he's a choice for one of our awards next week.
Yeah.
And I would tell you, I see it maybe a little differently than that. I think he's got some of the power and now he's got to figure out a little more of the strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the guy that's been going out hard from the start at every race. We talked about that a lot, and especially in the beginning of the season. And he doesn't necessarily have the strategy. Kind of Ellen Van Looy, right? Goes out really hard. And now late in the season, he just doesn't have the legs left to power out at the beginning of the race. If he races smarter, perhaps, next season, then I think he's in the mix each week.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's in Kevin's place or what, but you know, and while we're out here, we probably should iron these things out behind closed doors amongst the three of us. But is Kevin's place with an I or an E?
You know, I thought it originally when I saw how Scott did it with the E, I was like, oh, it should be an I. I like the E. I like it being sort of a seventh place, but it's a Kevin place.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. That's on purpose.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I like K.
If we named it after Kevin himself, it should be with an I. But
no. But it's better
going with nominal number
because it's great because it's Kevin like seven, but it actually means three. So it's just confusing enough.
Exactly.
That is perfect.
Exactly right.
So like Twerd is really fourth.
So Mason in this race stole Kevin's place.
Right.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. Because they were really close.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the finishing time? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Well, I mean, they were all at 4 seconds back. You know, two through fifth were,
Then the next day, the universe got returned to normal. Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead, Bill.
No, yeah, I was going to say, here's another question is that, you know, when we're looking at, you know, I brought up Lauren Swick. What's interesting is looking at the generations, you know, we have this Vanderpool and Van Aert. They're still 22 and 23 years old. The generation that you would think would be winning this race is or sort of the mid-20s. You know, the outliers in this race, at least, Mason's 29, old man Powell's now at 33. He's right. Going to be like the senior member of this group always. The guy
Vanderhaar is what, 26?
Vanderhaar, and I sort of give Vanderhaar, he's sort of in his own little class since he started so young. He was the first guy to get that, you know, exception and allow to race elites before Vanderpool and Van Aert did it.
He's a tweener.
Yeah, but he's still 26. So he's actually – so when you look at Lars Vanderhaar, and if I were to say Lars Vanderhaar and Corne Van Kessel, who's younger between those two?
I think Vanderhaar.
Okay.
Yeah,
I would think the other way. So they're the same age.
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying. So you have sixth place in this race, Corne Van Kessel. Seventh place, Michael Vanternot. Eighth place, Gianni Vermeersch. Ninth place – Vincent Bastens. They're all right. like between 26 and 28 years old. I guess Vantranov's the exception. He's 24. Those are the guys you think, you know, that's sort of this next class that we're looking to move up there to the front. So it's just sort of interesting that they all have now this year moved up to that top 10 and are all starting. And I think in that group, the most surprising ones, you know, Vermeersch, who got dropped by his team last year, seemed to be a disappointment, goes to a new team and really started to shine and get some top five, top 10 finishes. And then Vinny Bastains, just out of nowhere, having a really, really good year.
Yes, yeah. absolutely.
Yeah. Although he went back to into nowhere yesterday in Middlekirk. I know we're going to talk about the specifics of that race. Did you see that kind of that crazy course coming up that step up? He just kind of disappears.
Did he punch anybody?
I don't think he did, but he may have.
Did he throw a bike? Or... Oh, by the way.
But Tom Mason did apologize for it.
Okay.
By the way, guys, the UCI just posted the Holst results.
So. Wow. Nice work. Yeah.
Like within the, I mean, we just were checking that. So,
well, we made a demand for it. So,
yeah, they heard us.
Well, it's good to see that that person is still on the job because once we talk about the director's meeting, well, I can explain how the person who is in charge of doing the UCI schedule is on holiday. So we're not going to get any updates for a couple weeks on that.
Gotcha. So we're still going to have that mishmash of whatever that is. All right. So women's race in Lille was great. Rain. I mean, there was big rain, like big. You could see the rain on this TV. It comes down. Well, let me just give the top five. The top five finishing out was Maud Captains. Second place was Sané Kant. Third place was Laura Verdonchop. Fourth place, Sophie DeBoer. And fifth place, Katie Compton. And Bill, you mentioned coming in right near the end of that race that Sophie DeBoer crash that took out Verdonchop was right behind her and it took her out too. But I was very impressed with the way Verdonchop came back after that crash and gets back in the mix to get third place. I thought that was an amazing.
She went completely down, like both feet down, had to get back and was able to catch Captains and Khan and get back into the race. Just extraordinary.
Absolutely. And actually had the lead, you know, so then they come up onto the finishing sprint or straight and she's actually in the lead and did kind of a weird thing. I mean, I think she didn't want to be in the lead. I don't know what you guys think, but she, you know, she knew, okay, if I'm going, then Kant will just ride around me right at the end. So she kind of slows up. I think she slowed up a little bit too much. And then there's this look on Sané Kant's face like, what the hell's going on? What are we doing?
I think Sané Kant looked the wrong shoulder.
Yeah. And like, what are we doing? And their Maud Captain's just pounced on that, goes around them on the right and deservedly so gets that win. Just an awesome, awesome race. What did you guys take away from it?
It was classic. It was a classic sprint and David's exactly right. Like Aunt is just has all eyes on Verdonchop and is looking at her over her left shoulder, just watching her, you know, slowing down. They're basically, you know, cat and mouse for that sprint, waiting for either who's going to go first. And Maud Captain just goes on the right side, just bullets by both of them.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Kant doesn't see her until she's just, you know, she probably feels the water coming off of her rear wheel and was like, oh crap, I got to go. And, you know, wasn't able to catch her and just, you know, an awesome, I mean, Maud Captains just played that perfectly.
For the Americans, let me just give the Americans really quick. In this race, in 12th place was Ellie Anderson. 14th was Katie Antineau. 27th was Julie Wright. And in 41st was Erin Faccone.
And I know you mentioned it, Scott, as you've given the top five, but when we're going through the Americans again, Katie Compton, number five.
Right. In number five. The other thing I wanted to mention in this race, wicked crash at the start for Nikki Brammier. Holy crap.
Oh, that wasn't that scary, especially with her history from last year. Or was it this year?
Which season earlier was it? This year.
This year, yeah.
She just had some really bad luck. I saw that might have been a rear quick release. Did you guys hear that?
No.
I didn't hear anything. I looked at it a couple of times, and I thought either rear quick release or maybe... like a pedal either a break in the pedal or something like that, because she went down and kind of left foot right off the pedal, where you end up that abrupt, I'm sitting on the top tube sliding kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think it makes sense that it's a quick release. I mean, it would have, her rear wheel would have immediately jacked to the left, right? Would have sent her in that direction, right into that wall like it did. And because I guess that's what happened. So her quick release.
Although that said, Scotty D, she's riding a Specialized S-Works Crux, which is through axle, no?
I don't know. Maybe she has a different one or an old one, or I don't know.
She may.
Yeah, I don't know what.
If anyone's riding the latest, greatest, it should be.
Yeah, I would think that. So who knows? But yeah, just a wicked crash. And it was really, and she tweeted out before the race was even over that she was okay, which was very nice to see. And
yeah.
All right. Anything else you guys want to talk about Lille at all? Again, great race. People, you know, this is, again, like we've said a couple times now, this is a reason why to not stop watching after Worlds, because this was one of the best race weekends all the way around that we had all season.
Yeah, so, you know, the women definitely set the bar really, really high. And, you know, thankfully, this was one of the rare times that the men's race was able to match it, if not better it in the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
So would you say, I mean, with everything that was going on there, Bill, would you say meaty, beady, big and bouncy or what?
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I yeah. I'd go with that.
Okay, so.
I mean, I don't know. You know, the one thing that I will say is that with all of the youth movements, both in the women's and also the men's field, it definitely isn't my generation.
No, it's not. The kids are all right, but...
But it's not my generation.
For some of these other guys, the song is over. In between you and me, Bill, I think the beards have all grown longer overnight.
I don't know how you feel. I'm not sure I hope to die before I get old.
It's like looking those up on your phone while we're talking, because don't remember all those.
No,
up.
These You're are right. Just all.
No, I have not. I did go to college in the 80s.
Exactly.
All right. So
I don't even know how we got on this whole Who thing to start with.
The pictures of Lily.
Oh, that's right. Pictures of Lily. Okay.
Oh, gotcha.
Also my daughter's name.
All right, so now we have overall results for the DeVay-Vay series. I'm going to give those, Bill, and then maybe we'll do a question. Does that sound good?
That sounds like a good plan.
Question or a letter. All right, so for the men, the overall DeVay-Vay winner was Wout Van Aert with 8 hours, 15 minutes, 47 seconds. Second place was Kevin Powels, plus 322. Then Michael Vanternode in third, plus 455. Fourth place was Corne Van Kessel, plus 836. And in fifth place was Tone Aert, plus 914. Wout now, I think, has won 3 years in a row, the DeVay-Vay series for the men. For the women, I know she's won it. This is at least her second year in a row. It was harder to look up women's history for this. But Sonny Kant taking it with 5 hours, 50 minutes, and 35 seconds. Second place, Thalita de Jong with plus 428. Third place, Ellen Van Looy, plus 548. Fourth place, Maud Captains, plus 732. Fifth place, Laura Verdonschot, plus 811. As people remember, DeVay-Vay goes by time. That's why those results are like that. And those are our top five for the overall DeVay-Vay. It's been a great great series. And again, let's say thank you to Trek.
Yes.
For showing this, making this so easy to watch, because that was a real problem with Super Prestige this year. But Trek just has made watching the DeVay-Vay races this year a breeze and a real joy. So thank you very much to Trek and Trek Bikes for doing that and supporting cyclocross in general. So, okay, Bill.
All right.
Because I know we got lots of possibilities here.
Yeah, we have quite a few questions. Just what we ended up talking about right now is the, you know, potential motorized doping by Wout Van Aert, and JB coming in with a question to us just about what the protocol is for testing the bikes. I'm going to have to get a better answer on what the actual procedure is. I know that they are still going through the pits with the iPad, you know, type device and checking all of the bikes. I can also tell you that the from what I understood, the SRAM guy who installed Wout's bottom bracket was like, well, I was the one that put that in, not his team, and I can tell you there was no motor in there when I was putting his cranks on. So at least we know that for those bikes. But you know, that's all neither here nor there. I know a lot of the argument out there is that it's not actually one of these down tube seat tube motors, but also like the wheel, some electromagnetic
wheel magnets and the stays and all that stuff.
Magnets, how do they even work in rear wheels? And but who knows? I honestly don't think it's happening, but that's I can ask about that and see. I know that at the USA cycling meetings that I just went to, they did have a whole session for race officials on testing bikes, so it's definitely coming to your USAC level races as well, probably the higher up races on the road and probably cyclocross, so it is going to be there. The interesting little factoid from that meeting is that Femke Van Dreschen's bike was in the house. You know, they weren't allowed
it stands as the shining example, the beacon that everyone uses.
No pictures or anything, so who knows, maybe unofficially it wasn't even there. The funny story behind that is that the reason that the UCI isn't still in possession of this bike is that no one has ever claimed it as their own.
I was going to mention that is not her bike.
It's not her bike. It's just a bike. It is a bike that was found
with her name on it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Might be that other guy, the bird guy. But it was, it's just this bike that they have that was found in the pits in her area that has this motor in it that the UCI now just by default owns. So
they just have it.
They have it. Yeah.
The other part of JB's question is, when are bikes scanned and is this remotely consistent across major UCI events? The answer for that right now is no. It is not consistent for sure. But like you say, Bill, if it moves to even USAC races, that might be a sign of more consistency in the future. We'll just have to wait and see. But I wouldn't call it consistent right now. For any races that I've been to. I haven't gone to any in Europe, but certainly not consistent at the U.S. level right now.
So. Go ahead, Dave.
Just to quickly save those.
Go ahead while Bill hangs some wallpaper.
Yeah, sorry.
I was getting a letter out.
while we're going through the keep the cards and letters at home department, I have looked it up, and she does actually have both front and rear quick releases on her Specialized Crux.
There we go.
As of January 11th.
2010.
So, no, 2017. No. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's good. Good. I'm glad you looked at that. All right. What do we want to do? We want to go on and give more results, or we want to do another question, Bill?
I was just going to say that we have some Michael Vanham sent us a voicemail. I'm going to save that for our award show because it is pertinent to that. But what I want to do now is that we actually got a real live letter in the mail.
Snail mail, physical
snail
paper letter.
Mail letter. And
this, well, it must be an old guy that sends us something like that.
Yeah. That's true.
Because
it has
young
to be.
Crowd doesn't even know how to use a pen anymore.
It turns out this is from friend of the show and one of our favorites, Lane Mayer. Sent us a letter.
Did he include $2? If he would have put like $2 in with it, that would have been amazing.
Perfect.
Scott?
Plus tip.
Can I go back to our pre-meeting discussion?
Oh no!
Where I told
it wasn't even me.
Where
it wasn't
I told
me.
David, I said, David, I'm gonna read this letter by Lane. What I want you to make sure that you don't do is blow the punchline before
I
read the letter. And I only said David because I was like, of everybody on the show, who's going to do this? It's gonna be Mr. David Palin. I didn't know that Maud Captions was waiting on my other side, and I forgot to look right and only look left. And the person that was going to do this was actually Scott Diedenbach.
Somebody was motor doping over there on the other side.
I had no, I with my eyes, I'm Sonic Khan. And all I'm doing is watching Verdon shot, waiting for her to go. And I don't even see captains on the other side coming up.
This is how in sync we are, man.
So Bill, just toss that. We don't even need to read that.
Yeah, throw the whole letter out.
Dear Bill, Scott, and Dave. Thanks for all the shout-outs and great episodes on the show this season. We always listen to the show on long drives to races, and my dad and I always have a good laugh about the $2. I have put your $2 in the envelope, and I would have put 2 euros, but I had no more coins left from my trip to Europe. My season has only taken a brief rest as I am preparing for many early season stage races with Hot Tube Cycling this year. Thank you again. By the way, huge fan of Sven Nys and have watched everyone at least 5 times, and it was amazing to ride the courses in real life. Hope to find more Sven Nys videos somewhere, Lane Mare. And in that envelope also, I got rider cards that I will send out to you all because I have some other stuff to send to you, to Scott and David, and to U.S. American dollars. Thank you, you know, Lane. That is awesome.
We got to get Lane to sign those, to sign those $2, and then we could like auction them or something. I bet we'd get thousands of dollars.
Put them in some plexiglass, you know, with a little plaque on it.
And then we could donate that to like, I don't know, some
to his European campaign.
Yeah, there we go.
Or to some fund that could be started to fund all of the riders going to Worlds.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I'm sure we will run into Lane next year somewhere. So we'll have to think about that, Bill.
Yeah, Lane.
Think about that.
That was awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lane. Thank you. That's so cool, and I can't wait to see it.
Lane weighs 62 kilograms, according to his rider card.
Nice.
Did David ask that?
No, it's on here. 175 centimeters, 62 kilograms, born October 17th, 2000.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Let's move on, guys, so that this show isn't another 3-hour show. But we had another race the next day after Lille was the second to last super prestige race in Hoogstraten. This was also a good race. You could kind of see, I think, that everybody put a lot out the day before. But let me give the top five. I'm going to give the wide angle podium for the women to start it off. In first place, coming back after that crash, in the day before, was Sophie DeBoer taking the win. Second place, this was awesome to see, got so much attention, was Helen Wyman, after a season of being injured. Seeing her coming back in a race this size and get second was amazing. Third place, Ellen Van Looy. Fourth place, Sanne Kant. And fifth place, Maud Kapteyns. For the United States, in sixth place was Katie Compton. Seventh, this is kind of weird, 6, 7, and 8, Compton, Antino, and Anderson. 29th was Julie Wright, and 42nd was Aaron Facone. So, what did you guys think of that? Helen Wyman, was that cool to see or what? She was so excited. You could just see it in her tweets and everything, how awesome it was for her to get back in there and get a second place.
Well, coming off of Worlds, you know, I think that she had a ride as good or better than she expected to in Worlds. And
16th, yep.
Yeah, 16th place, you know, coming off that horrific injury and just building from there. And yeah, I mean, she's got to be stoked, especially probably wishes the season was a couple weeks longer, even since she's just coming back and finding this great form. But I think it's definitely one of those things that, you know, could have been career ending for her, and for her to come back, you know, work that hard, get healthy, come back this strong is pretty awesome to see, and just, you know, is going to be a great lead up for her next year.
Another thing I don't think we get to see a lot is Katie Compton riding in a super prestige race. I do not think that happens very often.
Yeah, so they forwent the early season trips to Europe, and I guess in exchange for that, decided to really end out the season in Europe instead. So after Worlds, you know, she's been there until this weekend.
Yeah, very cool. David, any observations from the women's super prestige?
Yeah, you know, if you're looking at Saturday, Sunday there, Saturday, the youngsters are in charge, going hard at it. And then on Sunday, looking at the, you know, Helen Wyman, a little longer in the tooth, and Ellen Van Loy as well, doing really well. And Kate Compton's right up there as well. So, you know, there's those shall we say, more mature legs that diesel along and do well in the back-to-back races, maybe the longer races when we see that in women's racing. It's really good to see that in the field.
Yeah, that's interesting to see. So, okay, then we had the men's race in for the top five for the men's race. In first place was, any guesses? Matthew Vanderpool. Second place, Wout Van Aert. Third place, Kevin Powell.
I think you meant Kevin's place.
In Kevin's place, I was going to say, returns the universe to normal with Kevin's place finish, Kevin Powell's. Fourth place was Lauren Sweek. Fifth place, Corne Van Kessel. For the U.S. men, Hyde was in the race, but he DNF'd. I don't know why. Did anybody see why? Did you guys see why?
No.
Yeah, he was in the official results as DNF, but who knows why that was. And since there was no other American man, I just, you know, Michael Vandenham.
Let's go North American.
Exactly. So for Canada, in 31st place was Michael Vandenham, and in 34th place was Jeremy Martin. There you go, Michael.
Yeah.
There you go. So for people, Michael gave us, he like was teasing us about not giving Canadian results. So there you go. I think it was Michael, wasn't it?
It wasn't, but it was a proxy. So.
Okay. All right.
A proxy.
But I'm all for that. We can give North American results.
Yeah. So, all right. That's how that race finished. I don't remember any major things from the men's race. Anything stand out for you guys from that race?
No, not really.
After the day before, it was like, it would have been tough to beat the racing of the day before. So, all right. Do we want to, there was still, one more super prestige race with Middlekerk, which was just yesterday. Do we want to just run through those results and then give the super prestige final and then do some questions? Okay. So for Middlekerk, for the men, Matthew Vanderpool in first, Wout Van Aert second, Lauren Sweek in third, in Kevin, in fourth was Lars Vandehaar, and in fifth was Gianni Vermeersch. For the women, first place was Sané Kant, getting her first win in the rainbow jersey, I believe. Second place, Sophie DeBoer. Third place, Ellen Van Loy. Fourth place, Maude Kapteyns. And fifth place, bouncing back, as we should say, Nikki Bramier. For the U.S. women in the women's race, there were no men at U.S. men at Middlekerk. And for the U.S. women, in eighth place was Ellie Anderson, so top 10 for her. 22nd was Julie Wright. 29th was Christine Vardaros, and in 31st was Aaron Ficcone. So that gives us the super prestige final for 2016-2017 overall. Go ahead, Bill.
Let's just give a special shout out to Aaron Ficcone for going over and doing all of these races. I think it's pretty awesome, and she had a great experience doing that and sort of immersing herself in that Belgian and Dutch culture and racing a ton of races and sticking with it. And I think it's going to be huge for her coming up next season.
See Erin all over the place at U.S. races, which is very cool. I actually talked to her at, I believe it was KMC this year. So just cool. Cool seeing her going. I didn't even know she was going. I saw her name and I'm like, oh my God, that's so awesome. I'm glad you mentioned that for sure. So for the super prestige overall, 2016-2017, for the women, first place is Sané Kant with 113 points. Second place, Sophie DeBoer with 100. So that came right down to it. You know, they were 1-2 at that final race there. Third place, Ellen Van Loy, also with 100. And I'm not sure why she got designated as third.
More wins.
It must have been more wins. I was looking at that. Fourth place, Ellie Anderson with 69 points, and fifth place Laura Verdonschot with 67 points. So very
and
cool.
Kudos to all the women in but Ellie Anderson.
Yeah.
Good job, man. Showing that she's racing real consistently this past year.
I agree.
And real strongly at that.
Coming back with the season in Europe after the just not great situation that she had when she was over there before. And, getting the job done over there. So well done for her. For the men, Matthew Vanderpool in first with 119 points. The only second place he got in any Super P race this year was, I think it was the fifth or sixth race, was Francorchamps. That's the only time he finished second to Wout. He won every other Super Prestige race. So he finishes with 119 points. Wout second with 113 points. Lawrence Sweek third with 92. Kevin Powell's fourth with 72. And Jens Adams in fifth with 66 points. So nothing, no major surprises there. You know, and I think I saw Matthew Vanderpool and a thing said, yeah, it would have been nice to sweep. Because then I would have had 120 points. but one thing I want to say about the Super Prestige is they need to do something to make those races more accessible. I hope they do something coming up soon to make those races more accessible.
And it seems weird that it's like Telenet that is doing this. You know, it's Telenet Play, so that's the exclusive provider. Yeah. And you have to have a Telenet cable box to be able to get those races. So it's even, you know, even our heroes of cyclocross, the Europeans and Belgians and Dutch who are pirating these feeds for us so the rest of the world can see them, they can't. You know, it's just that it's not possible with these races. But I was saying, it's weird that the sponsor of the World Cup, which is supposed to be this thing that everyone has access to and we all find our ways to see it, is also doing this very exclusive and closed off series as well. I'd love to get
they're just trying
there.
They're just trying to force you to go to the races so you don't just sit home and watch them on TV.
That's it. It's like the blackouts.
It's like,
right?
The old blackouts from the old days.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and you remember, I don't know if you guys remember, but that Hoogstraten race for the women's race was terrible. I mean, it's like they had one server that's, you know, some guy's computer in his basement controlling the feed. It was just so choppy. And then
it wasn't a big 400-pound guy in New Jersey.
And then certainly coincidentally, as soon as the men's race starts, bling, everything's fixed and everything's back and beautiful, you know. So with the super prestigious history, I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt on that either. Yeah. I'm sorry. They, with their history of not treating women's cycling as good as it should be treated, or, you know, equal to the men's or better than the men's, I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt on that. So they need to do, I hope they do some, because these are great races and they, you know, it'd be really nice to be able to see them better. So, all right. What are we doing next, Bill? You want to do more questions?
I don't know. We want to talk about Holst.
Did you want to talk about Holst?
Yeah.
So I'll just pull those up.
This course looked crazy. I still haven't watched all of it, so I need to pull it up and see it. But just from what we saw, it looked like an amazing course. I know people were just, it's a Brico Cross race, and people were just going nuts over this course. The one thing, just looking at pictures right off the bat, the post that they used, you know, I know they use a lot of wooden posts in Europe, and we've seen like the horse barriers at Sven's race and that stuff. These are just insane. They're huge. They're like tree trunks on this course. But there was just this descent that went into the lake that was pretty awesome, and it looked like a fun one. So definitely one.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out.
And I think that some nice results in the women's race, at least, and the men's.
Well,
let me start. Yeah.
Let me start with the men, since I've got that pulled up right here. First place was Matthew Vanderpool.
Really?
Again, so he's basically sweeping everything since Worlds. Holst is a C2. It's not part of any of the other series that we cover. Second place, Lars Vanderhaar. Third place, Wout Van Aert. Fourth place, Tom Mason. And fifth place, Michael Vanthernout. So that's the top five.
Yeah, I think Vanderhaar was really excited with that, and I think he was able to stay up near the front and to get a second place. I think, as we had talked about earlier, just seeing that progression back to the top for him is exciting, especially for fans, that we have another person in there that might be fighting for the wins.
Yeah. And for the women's race, top five for the women, first place is Sané Kant, second place Katie Compton, third place Laura Verdonschot, fourth place Ellen Van Looy, and fifth place Anne-Marie Vorst. Other American women in the race, Ellie Anderson was 11th, and Julie Wright was 19th, Christine Vardaros was 23rd, and I think Aaron DNF'd there at the bottom. So yeah. We'll see. Or DNS'd, I don't know. It doesn't say. On the UCI results, it doesn't say what the cause was. So yep. Katie Compton getting second.
That was what cool. I was – yeah, that was the part that I thought was just awesome. And just looking at the finish line photo of Sané winning it, and you can see Compton in the back giving high fives with this huge smile on her race. So I think this was an important result for her just to get – back to the top of the standings in one of these races.
Yeah, and seeing Laura Verdonchot and in third too, I think is very cool. She is going to be, we talked about how great the U23 women's race was at Worlds. The other two riders that finished ahead of Laura Verdonchot are graduating next year, and she's a couple years younger or a year younger than them, so she will still be back in that U23 field for elite women next year. So she's going to be tough to beat in that U23 next year. So cool to see her there. All right, Bill, what do you want to do? Where are you going? Where are you taking us?
I do want to mention about Verdonchot. One of the interesting things about her, you talk about her future, is that she, finalized her contract with Marlux, and which is awesome, which means she will be a full-time professional cyclocross racer. The fact that goes along with this that just blew my mind, even though we all kind of know it, but just to see it down there on paper, is that Belgium, the motherland of cyclocross, now has a total of two full-time cyclocross women. Two.
Yeah, right.
Well, we call it the motherland of cyclocross, but it's not, is it? It's the motherland of men's cyclocross.
Yeah, I think you're right, Dave. Right. That's absolutely true. So Sané Kant and now Lauren Verdonchot are the only two women who make their living, full-time living racing cyclocross.
Yeah, that needs to get better for sure. So that leads us right into a really good question that we got.
All right, go for it.
Oh, you want me to do it? Question number two.
Yeah.
Hi guys, Bill and Stephanie here from Beermonger Cycling Club in Oregon. We would like to submit feedback to your questions from last week. What would you like to see differently in the top level of cyclocross in the future? And that is for women to race for 1 hour equal to the men. These ladies are strong, impressive, and exciting riders. Why not give them the full hour to race? On past shows, we've heard you talk about how the lap times work for women, but why didn't they race for an hour? And thank you for your support of equal pay for women athletes. Would love to truly see equal pay for equal work. Thanks for a great show, Bill and Stephanie. So to be honest, I would like to see all cyclocross races be 50 minutes.
Yes.
Rather than a full hour. Men, women, everything. Except until you get to real young kids, then go ahead and shorten the race. But I think for all the elite levels, U19, U23, and elite, 50 minutes. A cyclocross race is 50 minutes long. Period. Is that what you think, Bill?
Yeah, absolutely. That's been my take on this. I know that we've agreed on this in the past, and I think it solves a lot of issues that we're seeing recently in these races. When I interviewed Katie Compton, she said the exact same thing. You look at the men's race, and there's always a lull. If they're racing eight laps and then it's an hour long race, you can look at laps kind of like 4 through 6, three through six, where once the lead has been established, once that lead group is out there, they usually, if they know that no one else is catching back up, they're all just taking their foot off the gas or off the motors.
Maybe we shouldn't use that expression.
Yeah, taking their fingers off the motor buttons and just sort of hanging out for a couple laps and getting in there. Where the women, there's more of an immediacy in these races. It's, you can't let up at all or you're going to be gone and boom, 42 minutes and the race is over. So, sort of find that happy medium where it's 50 minutes, you're going to get more intense racing. Hopefully, you'll get closer racing because no one's, or less. It brings it down where more people are able to go all out for that 50 minutes than, some guys, that hour is just, that much too long and that they can't do that effort like that. So, maybe it'll bring the field together and will be more exciting for, I agree, all the races, U23s, juniors, all the way down.
And hopefully someday this is an issue, but 50 minutes fits awfully better into a TV time slot.
Mm, yeah.
Someday, hopefully that would help, you know. So, no, but I totally agree with you. Let's get rid of that lull in the middle, and let's just make it simple, straightforward. Everyone races for 50 minutes to win. But it's important that, I mean, I think the gist of their comment here is that the women and the men, and the elite women and elite men race for the same amount of time, and I absolutely agree with that 100%. I just think it should be 50 minutes.
There's no reason for it not to be. It's not like saying, oh, you know, I can almost imagine that originally it was like, what, women can't race for an hour?
Tell every woman marathoner that, right? Or women tennis players that are out there in the heat for, you know, all that time in a full length tennis match. That's just nonsense.
I think it also comes from that mindset that they didn't want women racing in the first place. You know, that's when we had the 8 right, a.m. women's right. races and that kind of stuff, and it was going to be as short as possible to get in there. I'm hoping that with the television viewership and everything else that's happened, that maybe that has changed some. This is also the perfect time to plug an article that I actually put together for RAFA that's up on their RAFA features page, which is sort of the future of that. I wrote it on the future of the youth movement in women's cycling, but just how exciting that is. And also with a little bit of an American bent to it, that what we offer for younger women developing in cyclocross is stronger in the U.S. than it is right now in the motherland of cyclocross, Belgium, and that is shown in some of the results that our American racers have been able to achieve.
I just rewatched the U23 women's race from Worlds today.
Yeah.
And I was like sitting on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, great race. It was a great race.
I noticed it, and I'm like, oh my God, I know what's going to happen, and I'm still like nervous. It was such a great race. So, yeah, well done. That article was very good. I read it yesterday. So,
yep. Go ahead, Dave.
If you haven't already, each of you guys, as well as our listeners around the world, go out and rent, view, however it is that you get these kinds of things to your eyeballs and your ears. Half the Road by Catherine Bertini. I don't know if you guys have already seen her film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It starts off talking about equality for women in road cycling, but it's really much bigger than that. And you guys talking about kind of the historical aspect of it, and the fact that women weren't allowed to run the Boston Marathon until, what was it? The middle of the, was it 60s? 70s?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're afraid their uterus would, of course, fall out if they ran that far.
That was actually the reason given. That ridiculous.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
When saying, you know, women can't race for the 60 minutes, that's the kind of mindset that makes up those decisions. Go watch that movie. Great movie.
It's available on iTunes. You can actually just go to halftheroad.com, and they have all the information there.
Cool. All right, Bill, do you want to do another letter
I think we actually had another letter that plays right into what we're talking about now. And this is from Mark Wilson. With World Cup Waterloo putting up equal payments for men and women, are we seeing an opening for the U.S. to figure more prominently and regularly in the World Cup and World Championship schedule? And also, does this provide some added incentive to bring more international competition than we already had last year? And then finally, would Jingle Cross providing equal payouts make the travel even more appealing? So again, I guess this is really based on bringing more women here and building the international scene for the U.S.
I think it certainly doesn't hurt. I would love to believe that the fact that women get paid equal amounts at all U.S. World Cups, that's going to, you know, cause more shift in more cycling coming over here, especially cyclocross. I don't know that that's actually going to happen, just because there's been a lot of equal payouts out here already, right? And it's made a little difference, and I would love for it to make a huge difference. I wish it would. I don't know if it will really make a huge difference, but it certainly can't hurt. I think it makes some difference, which is good. And it's one of these things where every little thing we can do to bring more and more equality to that equation is good. So in the end, I think it's a great thing. It's better. And I think for us to set the precedent that in the U.S., all cyclocross payouts are equal for men and women is a great, great thing that should continue forever. So
yeah. I can, this has been an issue with me, especially just recently when Trek announced that they would be offering equal pay for the World Cup race that they are having in Waterloo this year. It's a good chunk of change. I mean, that's the disparity between the men's payout and the women's payout is huge. It's tens of thousands. It's like $10,000, maybe more than that. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
To make that equal. I asked the promoter of Jingle Cross just this past weekend if there was any way that they'd be able to do that, and he said that he would love to. It's something that they definitely would love to be able to do, but right now what he told me was that with their operating expenses it's impossible for them to do, and they would be losing money and not able to have the event if they were to do that. So that is the word I got from Jingle Cross.
Yeah. So we'll see. Maybe, maybe things can change. Maybe if they start pulling big crowds, if they start getting more racers over here, they'll actually have more money, and that will come eventually. So,
well, that's all well and good, but there's also the aspect of it that says, I understand as it stands today that contractually the men, their minimum payment is higher than the women's minimum payment, and what promoter wants to pay more than the minimum? I get that, all that. But it's when the promoters start saying, wait a minute, this isn't right. We got to change this piece of it and make it equal. That's when it'll change.
Sure, yeah.
As long as they say, yeah, it's fine with me, we'll just pay the men more because that's the way it is, it will continue that way.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I can sense the outrage.
Well, because I've always said that, and we've talked about it locally for our tiny little Michigan races, we're going to have races where we pay women and we don't pay the men out at all.
There you go.
Are you ready for this? This is just actually insane. Men's payout, and this is in euros, men's elite payout, which goes from first place all the way down to 50th place. And 300 euros for 50th place is the total payout, 42,500 euros.
Right.
Women's payout, 7,400.
And goes how deep?
25. And they get 100. So it is a good $20,000 to $30,000.
So this is what I'm saying. This is why it's as much on the UCI as, and I agree with everything you said, David. If race directors can do that, that's a great thing. But there is no reason why from 30th place to the 50th place, men should be getting anything.
Oh yeah,
that money should be in the women's purse, right?
And,
or wherever you have to split it so that it comes out equal.
Well,
right, that's where you split it.
So 4, 7, 8, 9, 10. You're looking.
Some of these guys that finish in 50th place are like two laps down.
Worse than that,
and they're getting 300 euros.
I mean, I could sit here and do the math, but just eyeballing it from 26th to 50th place in the men's is probably not that much less than first to 25th in the women.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, and Helen Wyman has done a great job. She pointed out a lot of that stuff when she was on the commission. And yeah, it's just sad. That's
the winner.
Ridiculous.
Winner of the women gets the same money as 11th place. In the men, the second place women's gets the same as 17th.
Yeah, that's just
when you get down to 10th place for the women gets the same as 50th place for the men.
Yeah, that's just is absolutely insane.
Yeah,
and again, in general, which race is more exciting? In general, I know this year for a change it's been a little different. But in general, the women's race is more exciting.
Yep.
That's the one that's got people glued to their screens or screaming their lungs out at the show.
Yeah.
It's time to pay. For the excitement.
Here's another way to look at it. First and second place in the men's elite makes more than the entire women's field.
Right. That's just ridiculous. That is just ridiculous.
How much beer do you need to sell to fund the women's race?
How much longer
as,
do we have?
Not as much as you do for the men's race.
Right. This is nothing new. Listening, we have gone over and over and over this before, and yeah, this is nothing new, but this is the sad state of payout in cyclocross as it exists right now. So I think, you know, best we can do is keep harping on it, man. Just keep talking about it, keep pointing out that it's unfair, and try and force some kind of change if we can. So, David, anything else you want to say about that?
What, my red face rant wasn't enough?
I wish I had the video. All right. So, Bill, you've mentioned a couple times this. You went to some meeting, right?
Yeah. One piece of news, just looking at the cyclocross ticker here, that came out, I think, yesterday. We talked about Laura Verdonshot joining Marlux for next season, who will not be on Marlux Napoleon Games next season. Klaas Van Tornout. Not re-signed.
Okay. Huh.
So that is breaking news in the cyclocross world. Well,
still retired, now or what?
I don't think he's retired. He just is not being offered a contract for next year.
Huh. So does that mean he goes to Trek Segafredo with the other retirement candidates?
and I will get, just destroyed for my Dutch here, but Klaas Van Tornout gedumped door Marlux Napoleon.
He gedumped him?
They gedumped him.
Wow.
Well, we'll see what happens.
You'll be eating gedumptiflesh now. It's all my Yiddish for you.
Oh, man. That's interesting, Bill. Thanks for that. So, but you want to tell us about the meeting?
Yes,
We got the meeting surrounded. Eventually, we'll get to it.
What I can tell you is all going to be just shrouded in vagueness.
This is the and let's
go off the record.
So people know, this is the USA Cycling Race Directors meeting that was in Colorado.
Right. So this happens after the national championship for cyclocross. All of the UCI race directors will stay an extra day and sort of hash out everything that needs to be hashed out about the upcoming
next year.
Yeah, the upcoming season. Instead, for this year, they decided that it'd be good for all of us to sort of integrate into the rest of USA Cycling's discipline. So there is an entire race director, local association representatives, officials, just a whole gambit, and then cyclocross, road, track, all getting together for this symposium at the same time. But the important part for you all is that we had the same meeting that we do every year. First thing first, talked about the schedule, made sure you may have seen going to the UCI website, if you're savvy and you know where to look, the schedule, not the schedule, a schedule has been posted.
A wrong schedule.
As far as the U.S. races, I would not buy any plane tickets quite yet. There are definitely some dates on there that are incorrect. I don't think Rochester is on that schedule. Rochester is happening. It is going to be the first race again this season. That's the first thing on there. Next up, the one that is most important for me, in the schedule that is online right now, Gloucester and DCCX are on the same date, that October 15th weekend. That is incorrect. Gloucester will be there. DCCX will be the next weekend, that October 21, 22. That's also the weekend that CXLA is going to be on. That's something I'm kind of stoked about, because I think that's how the schedule works correctly. We have East Coast race, West Coast race. So that really, is I'm happy with that.
That's good.
Fine with me. I think there's also the Silver Goose is also that weekend up in Canada. So Unfortunately, we may miss seeing our favorite Canadian, Michael Vandenham, at DCCX, since he may have to stay in Canada for that week for their only UCI race. So the other things on the schedule worth noting, since he's still taking place but will not be the Continental Championship this year, the reason being that it's scheduled on the same date that Canadian Nationals are scheduled, and that's a conflict. So that can't happen. So therefore, the next week in Louisville, that will be the Continental Championship, and some interesting news about that Louisville race. I won't talk about it yet, but you know.
Oh, okay.
Or can we? I don't know. Are we able to?
I don't know. Let's leave it. We won't.
Let's leave it embargoed for now.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll leave that for next time. That we still have more to talk about.
I thought they announced it there officially.
Did they? I don't know.
No,
I
was
there.
Oh, there.
You
no.
were there.
No, it was. Oh, I can tell you that. No, not there. So Continental Championships in Louisville, that we know, and other stuff coming out about that race as well. And I think that's pretty much it as far as the schedule goes. National
now,
championships
tell us about this.
In Reno this year. We're still waiting to hear about next year, not only the location, but the date.
Bum, bum, bum.
And now tell us, Bill, about this crazy rule about feeding. That's what we all want to know about because we all read the article.
Yeah, so Cycling News came out with this article that had all of the new USA Cycling rules. Two that affected cyclocross. One was that there were going to be changes to the qualification rules to be eligible for the national championships at the elite level. And the second one, the way it was written, it said that feeding was going to be allowed in cyclocross. Not to throw anybody under the bus, but when these two rule changes were brought up in the meeting, it threw the USA Cycling representatives in the meeting for a bit of a loop because they had no idea what anybody was talking about. They didn't know about these rules happening.
Nice.
So
we don't know.
So there's a little disconnect between the USA Cycling communications department and maybe the other folks in the office. But again, that is a minor detail. I think what happened here is that there were some clarifications going on for the qualifications rule. That's not going to change. Basically, the qualifications to get to be able to race in nationals, which I think was like top 90, and then you can also appeal top 90 Pro CX, and then there's also an appeals process. I believe that's still the case.
So you're saying that the communications department was just
wasn't it like
alternative facts?
Maybe, possibly. Yeah.
Okay.
And again, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to talk out of turn here with that. It just seemed like there was a little bit of confusion how deep that went. I don't know. I may have misinterpreted all that. But anyway, that's for that. And then for this feeding rule, what from my understanding is that yes, there will be feeding allowed in cyclocross races. I don't know if it. I'm assuming it will have to be decided beforehand if that's going to happen, and where it will happen is not in the pits. And again, this is only for USA Cycling. This is not a UCI rule. This is just USA Cycling rules. It won't happen in the pits where it's happened historically. It will happen outside of the pits. Otherwise, like a road race, there will be a feeding zone, and that's the only place. So, you know, hand-ups not legal throughout the course. The hand-up's still a crime.
I think that's kind of the article implied that you could feed, you could basically
feed
hand
anywhere.
Up anything anywhere.
That's
and...
incorrect. That is incorrect. There will be a specific feeding zone that you could give your riders a bottle or whatever else, you know, they need.
And let's be honest. I mean, for a 40-minute, 50- or hour-long race, we're just talking about water at this point.
Yeah, we're probably talking about water. And
sets with, you know, that they're going to dig through and look for their neatly folded foil-wrapped rice cakes.
And we're really probably only talking about the early season races, to be honest. Right. Or maybe some of the stuff, you know, out in the south, southwest or something like that, where it's really dry and hot or something like that. So Cool.
Yeah.
Well, anything else? Anything else exciting happen? I mean, well, you know, this is like a big fancy meeting, Bill, and
it was big and fancy. nothing like being in a boardroom. so the big question, of course, you know, after USA Cycling sent out the survey, if I should. I was giving Mike a hard time. I was like, oh, your survey asking people if they wanted to go back to December. And he was like, we did not word it like that. It was more that they had a choice between December and January. And I was like, yeah, but every article said, hey, vote to get nationals back to December.
Back to December.
but no, it was the survey didn't go like that. It truly was. They did a nice job figuring out the questions to ask to see where people were and what they wanted to do. And then, you know, if you go back a number of years, there was a similar survey, and that's why we ended up in January. And now they're trying to get the feel of their cyclocross membership to see if everybody likes January or if the move should be back to December. Those results have, you know, been received by USA Cycling. And what I can tell you is, we don't know yet. We don't know yet if they're going to make a move, and not even going to share the results of the survey until they want those shared. But what I will tell you is that survey, and they're super clear on that, is just one part of the decision-making process. Yeah. So even if it's...
You can probably tell us that November didn't win.
They did get some write-ins for November, and it
did
was,
they?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. They definitely was on their on their radar, and one of the USA Cycling people independently came up with, well, that would be then it would be lined up with Canadian nationals. So I applauded them on being able to come up with that, even though we had already discussed it.
You know what it is. They listen to the show.
Wait till they find that there's foreign intervention involved in their voting.
That's okay. You know, it is the genius of change is to make people think it's their own idea.
That's right. Snuck that in there. You said.
That being said, it's not going to be in November.
Right. Let's be real. All right. Well, that sounds like, wow, what a great time that sounds like.
What else can I tell you about this meeting? Oh, well, you know, you all saw the movie Groundhog Day, right?
What about Groundhog Day?
You saw the movie? Yeah. So, So every year we get into this meeting and we talk about the Pro CX and we talk about the glory days of the USGP and Super Cup and all that. Thing where pros used to have these 8 races, 4 weekends that they could go to and battle it out against each other, and it was the best of the best going head to head, and there was big money on the line and coverage and a story to follow and a jersey, and it was just, you know, the halcyon days of American cyclocross. And when is that coming back? And we go in there and we talk about that returning every year, and we share stories about the USGP and how wonderful it was, and nothing happens.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it this year too. So
maybe they should find somebody who knows something about the USGP cyclocross and get them into USA Cycling.
Huh. That seems like a good... Wait, I think that happened.
Joan Hanscom?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same barriers that we've talked about every year. You know, it's you need a lot of money to be able to do this. You need to, you know, right now all of the races that were in the USGP are now autonomous. They're able to go out there and get their own sponsors. They're able to run the races like they want to run them. If you have a series and everybody has to then come back under the same umbrella, so it takes away some of those revenue streams and other things and puts it all under one promoter, and that seems to be a hurdle. Other people are, you know, wondering why USA Cycling just doesn't take over and make it the series. And I can tell you this, it's something that they are considering. That I can tell you, that's actually the news of this meeting. They would consider it. Is that ever going to happen? I don't know. You know, we'll have to wait and see. But it is definitely something that's a consideration. And people listening to this may say, that's amazing. That's exactly what we want to happen. That's their job. USA Cycling should be doing this. There's a lot of other people, including team owners and people at the highest level, that say, that's not USA Cycling's job at all. That's a conflict of interest for your governing body to be running a series basically in competition with other series. So now you have this top-level series that may be in competition with the Vittoria series. That's our only U.S. series right now, so that would be the only one. So is that right? And it's the same, you know, these same folks have problems with UCI running the World Cup. That's the exact same conflict of interest. That is a governing body running a for-profit series against the Super Prestige, against, you know,
EKZ, you name it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely not just like this is the best solution out there, but I will say it is something that they are to the point that it is under consideration. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I would fall on more on that side that I think there's some potential conflicts of interest there. I would worry about that. And to be honest, you know what? There's enough other stuff I would rather see USA Cycling concentrating on.
Yeah.
You know, like straightening out nationals, you know, getting let's make that better.
Yep.
So, to be clear,
it's not something that they're going to do. It's something only that they've said.
They
maybe
consider.
We'll think about it. So that's all. The news is really no news. The other interesting thing is that what that spawned in this meeting was a discussion that I liked about bringing in other regional series. You know, start making, since we have all of these UCI races out there in all these different areas, sort of taking the lead of what the Vittorious series is doing and making more regional series. You know, it can only be, I think, four races, is that right, for us after that? That's what I think Matt got in trouble for years ago, for having too many UCI races in their series.
Having
a Midwest series, having a West Coast series, having possibly a Mid-Atlantic series, and that makes it's regional, but at least then, you know, you get these competition and you can have a jersey and you can make it mean something. So
yeah, no, that'd be cool.
Other than that, the only other thing was talking about having more junior races, and we'll see. You know, there are definitely events out there who are looking at having, you know, again, this is where I have a little issue with it. It's only men's junior races that you can have for the UCI, or we're still not at the point where we can have like a women's U23 event, because that category doesn't exist outside of Worlds. So. But
yeah,
there are definitely some other races trying to do that, to give juniors, the junior men in this case, more incentive to stay home and not having to travel to Europe
and so
to get
we
that
don't
experience.
Get, so we
and
don't
to
get emails.
Them, yeah, but just to get the
it's,
get the head-to-head
it's worlds. It's Worlds and Continental. There's a U23.
Yes, you're right. Continental as well.
Just so we don't get emailed. All right, guys. Well, we are at... Well, thanks, Bill. That's awesome. Thanks for going to that just for the show, man.
Oh, yeah. That's the only reason I went. Yeah, just for the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
they usually don't let podcasts in there, but, you know, I got right?
Our man on the street.
Fake
news.
The season is done. The season is complete. Everybody's thinking about road cycling now, and we're all sitting here just waiting for Australia in August. So, as people know, that they've listened to the show before, we do our awards, right? Our awards show, completely made up categories that I don't know. Did I just make them up, or did we come up with them together or something that we've done? This will be the third year in a row that we've done these. So once again, I just wanted to give out the categories. We did have someone suggest some other categories that we could add to it.
Scott,
but this is what...
Scott.
Yeah?
We have Laven and Ustmal next weekend.
I know, but we cover... Do I have to tell you this, Bill?
I just don't want those letters that cyclocross is already over. Just the series that we cover, the bigger series.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we cover World Cup, Deveve, and Super Prestige. But no, okay, so technically, yes, you're right, and we can still watch those, and that's going to be awesome. But all right, so our categories are, I'll give them again. I gave them last week, but I'll give them again. Best course feature, best single lap of the season, most surprising rider, looking for a comeback, most controversial moment, CXer of the year, and of course, the Being Excellent Award. Bill, you mentioned last week, we're going to probably add a what changes would you like, changes that we need at the top level of CX. So we'll each give a thing for that. That was it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also feel like that's just our show every week, so I don't know if we really need that, but.
Right. And then we had Johnny send us in a question, and he said a couple awards to add to the list. And, I don't know. We'll see. But which race had the best broadcast coverage, Euro and the U.S.? That's kind of interesting. That'd be kind of interesting thing. And which U.S. race had the best social media coverage? So I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about those a little bit. I don't know if those will like jump into our list, but just some things. If viewers want to send us their thoughts on these, like who they would pick for any single category, please do it via the feedback email, via Twitter, via whatever. Right?
That would be cool. Twitter with the hashtag TDDTIE.
That would be great. Yeah, on any of our Twitter Twitter feeds, and we will try and get some of those added. If you just like send us a name, you know, someone's, I don't know that we'll read every single one we get, but if you have some interesting thing to say or a really interesting pick that we haven't thought about in any of these categories, maybe we'll give it a shout out on the show. So does that sound like a plan, guys?
That sounds like a plan.
Have we covered everything? Indeed. Is there anything else we need to cover? I'm so sad. I'm like bummed now, man. We still got one more show, but.
Yeah, it's like camp graduation day, right?
And we'll see you till next summer.
All right, Mr. David Palin, if people want to get in touch with you, what's that Twitter
sphere? Hit me in the Twitter sphere there.
Hey, David?
Mr. David Palin.
David,
yes, sir.
David.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm here.
Tell them, who are you?
Who am I? Who?
Who that?
You really want to know? You know, I got to tell you a really funny story before we go. I woke up in a Soho doorway. Policeman knew my name.
God.
Oh, yeah. It's at Mr. David Palin on the Twittersphere.
All right. Bill.
Yeah.
Give us all the...
Here's our outro music.
Are we breaking any copyright laws? But
I think we have 30 seconds. It's okay. You know, it's okay if we don't do that.
Which one of you guys is playing that?
David.
Of course. All right, David.
All right, sorry. There we go. Back to the show.
You know what? If we can't use that track, I'll just use a substitute.
Wow.
Now before the song is over. I already go for that one.
Yeah.
Bill, yeah. Where can people get in touch with you?
I don't know.
Where can people complain about this show?
Some things I just can't explain.
Man.
I can
don't
this.
Be so sad. Come on, be a little happy, Jack. Boris the Spider.
And I thought I wouldn't get fooled again. Yeah.
Well, you better bet.
Oh, see, it goes to show you how much of a Who fan I was. They were not my cup of tea, man.
The first 45 minutes of the show, you didn't even realize the reference.
Didn't, no, because I just was never that big of a Who fan. I don't know why. I was more like Stones, you know, that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, mainstream stuff.
Mainstream. No.
At CX Harris on Twitter and Instagram, cxharris.com. I got a lot of stuff stockpiled. I need to post on there from Worlds to Michael Vandenham's latest from Belgium, even though I think he may already be back in Canada.
Nice.
And get to us at feedback@cxhairs.com, or you know, send an email there and I'll give you my address, and then you, like Lane Mayer, can send some actual snail mail.
$2. Yeah, that's cool. And we will probably do, along with the awards next week, we'll probably do some more questions. And are we going to then... Are we still going to do a whole question show after the award show, or we want to just kind of incorporate as much into the...
We'll see how it goes. And then what I want to say is that Max Dilson, who was our... he actually won the raffle. He's the only... Wow. We got the show that actually had a winner for a raffle, so that just thank you all for listening and following along.
That was the numbers that we picked?
Yep, and I sent him out a prize pack. Also sent out a prizes to our episode 59 winners. I sent it to two of them. I feel like the third person did not respond with an address. So if you're still out there and you haven't received a prize package from me and you answered the boon, the white boon question from episode 59, get in touch with me. But yeah, I was happy to send all of that stuff out. So we're all good to go there. 405 CX Hairs. That's the helpline. That was the other piece of information I wanted to get out there. And finally, guys, I want to tell you that if you're looking for life insurance, you should go to healthiq.com/CXHairs, fill out a short survey, and you can get the best rates because you're a cyclist, and that's what they're looking to do. They're looking for people who are active, especially cyclists, and if you're looking for life insurance, which is something that you may want to purchase for your family and your loved ones, that those are the folks to help you out with that. It helps to show if you take that survey at healthiq.com/CXHairs.
Do it.
And I sat back and I did not use that hope I die before I get old reference there with the life insurance.
It would have been apropos there.
It was right on the tip of
you know, it was really far down the road. You may not have been able to view it, but you may not know this, David, but I can see for miles.
All right. And I am Scott Dienbach. You can get me on Twitter at cyclocrossnet is usually the best way, or just send it to the feedback line for email. Guys, I think we've done that. We hit the 2 hour mark.
At an hour 30.
Oh, man. Well, do you want to keep going? No. Let's wrap it up. All right, guys. Great show, as always. And we will talk again next week with our, I'm sure we're going to break new records with the awards show next week. So we will talk again then.
All right. Later on.
Sounds good. I got to catch the magic bus.